For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Reith. The ancient survival practice, detective's art, and meditation of tracking animals is making a comeback among citizen scientists and conservationists. This weekend, I talked with Megan Walla Murphy, a tracker who's studied with practitioners all over the world. I started by asking her how she would describe her job.
Sorry. My work is really diverse and varied. It depends on the day of the week, what I'm doing. I would say I'm an independent consultant, a wildlife ecologist. I teach wildlife tracking and have spent decades tracking. I work in conservation on habitat connectivity projects and wildlife projects. I'm adjunct faculty at the Santa Rosa Junior College, and I work for several different nonprofits and around the country, and have also worked in Southern Africa.
Walla Murphy started out in conventional scientific academia, but decided to change her approach after a study of genetic bottlenecking in young elephant seals. She felt it was disruptive to remove the animals from their habitat to study their genetic fitness.
So how would you approach studying genetic bottlenecking today, or is that even the angle that you would take if you wanted to find out what was going on with the population?
I would not even go there anymore. Because my understanding of genetic bottlenecking, which is very, very real, and because of habitat fragmentation or population fragmentation, whether it's due to our over-harvesting or because we're putting up malls and developments in core habitat areas, my work right now is on habitat connectivity and how do we really look at the fragmentation of our landscapes that we've created and start to connect them. So I work a lot looking at how do we set up land trusts so that this land can be protected in perpetuity, connecting landowners to each other, and can we take fences down or can we open these lands and tend to the habitats so that populations no longer become genetically isolated. Then I don't think it's only physical fragmentation. I see that humans are really fragmented from their own landscape. So a lot of my work is how do we reconnect humans to the land that they live on and landowners to the land that they share with other creatures. There's a lot about the sixth extinction and things like that, and that's absolutely happening. I don't want to downplay that. But people often ask me, you know, in the work that I'm doing, how do I remain so hopeful? And I am tremendously hopeful. In my time from getting out of school and university to now, which is 20 plus years, it is exceptional what's going on. And even the way that we're approaching our relationship with wildlife and with nature and habitat has really changed. It's a much more integrated, holistic view. There's a huge recognition now of indigenous people or people who've lived on the land for a long time and how their practices are increasing biodiversity. It's going to be very, very slow, this overturn, and I don't know that I'll see it in my lifetime, but what I see are people priming the soil for the generation that's coming behind us, or maybe it's two or three or seven generations, who knows, coming behind us so that each step is closer to health. And not just for like the health of the ecosystem out there, but the health of the integration of humans back into the system.
So you mentioned yesterday that wild pigs are taking a role in the environment that's not necessarily a completely villainous role.
I think in our zealousness to return it to this somehow native habitat, which I'm not even sure where you return to, a lot of species get villainized, and certainly the pigs have been villainized. So my question is, how do we recognize that they're here and look at what ecological functioning and what roles they're playing and live with it versus try to take it out or kill it or murder it? And so I spent the last year really tracking pigs deeply and going out with hunters who've been studying them and different biologists and reading a lot of papers, and I'm blown away. Yes, the pigs can damage some areas if they're in too many, but I also see them creating wallows that we are missing on our landscape that, you know, grizzly bears had originally done all over our landscape, and also elk were great wallow makers. And wallows allow water to pool. You get vernal pools from them. You can get wetland habitat showing up. I've seen places where pigs have come through and there's native juncus and sedges growing. And, you know, and then that takes us down the basketry route, which those are wonderful basket plants. But also in those places I've seen our native Sierra and chorus frog and other amphibians in these wetlands that the pigs have created. They also root. They totally root, and they can root to destruction in some places if their numbers are too great. But they root on contour, which helps to prevent erosion. You know, grizzlies used to overturn soil tremendously around here looking for tubers. Native, you know, they were eating native tubers in roots and things like that. And so pigs, there's a great study out of Berkeley talking about pigs picking up some of the ecological functioning that our grizzly bears were picking up. And I do want to also note that they're not completely simpatico with what the grizzly bears were doing, as grizzly bears reproduced really slowly and pigs reproduce very, very quickly. And so I do believe pigs need to be managed. We also can reintroduce this really healthy, beautiful hunting legacy. Like a hunter's legacy in the United States is an important role in that relationship of nature and also a relationship with death. And pig meat is tasty.
For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Reith. We just heard from Megan Walla Murphy, who taught a tracking workshop at the Hopland Research and Extension Center this weekend. Tune in later this week as we go on an expedition tracking toads, scorpions, and predators through the oak woodland.
It's cool. We have a kill event. It's a death site.
What was the bird doing so close to a foxhole tree?